Welcome to the Moose Room. Brad Hines here today. Emily is off this week, enjoying some of the nice fall weather here in Minnesota. The leaves are turning and, well, they're almost past peak, actually. And so it's really pretty outside for most of you probably here in the Midwest. Enjoy the fall. I maybe sound a little bit different today. The fall sort of crud is caught up to everybody. And so I'm a little off in my voice today. But anyways, I wanted to talk about, maybe give you a final update on one of the calf projects that we've been working on here at our research center. We have spent probably 3 to 4 years working on this project, looking at different housing options. So we're going to talk about individual housing, pair housing, group housing, and calves that were raised on the cow, and provide a little bit of insight today on what we found, what Brad thinks, and where we go from here. Sort of some of the highlights. Some people might not agree with my perceptions on calf housing. One of the things that we'll find out is calves grow well no matter how they are housed, at least in our research center, in our research study. Individual, pair housed, group housed calves, they all grew the same, maybe slight differences. In the end, we'll try to persuade you, possibly, to go to group housing. And I know there's a lot of groups out there that are promoting pair housing for lots of different reasons. Brad is not a big fan of pair housing, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But really, what sort of set us off on this calf project was really looking at ways of housing. You know, that's becoming a hot topic in the dairy industry. You see it here in the Midwest. You know, milk processors are stating you can't house calves individually anymore. You have to at least go to pair housing. You can look to California, where yes, you can't raise calves or soon individually as well. And how do a lot of these dairy farms sort of move away from individual calf housing because it's sort of been, you know, deemed not good from a social standpoint. So we set off to do that. And really, it comes down to, you know, calf mortality as well. You know, on dairy farms, we find 6% calf mortality by weaning, which in my view is way too high. You know, at our dairy here, we have 300 calves born per year. We're probably at a 1 to 1.5% death loss. So we maybe lose 3 calves a year, and I think 3 is too many. It does happen. And so we're out to explore how we can reduce calf mortality. Now, before we sort of get into, you know, goals on this project about how, you know, we raised calves, I think it's really imperative to go back and look at a few things. So dry cow nutrition, that's probably one thing that people forget about. You know, dry cow nutrition is essential to have healthy calves. It is probably a must. We, you know, I know a lot of people, we think, you know, dry cows get thrown out on the back 40 until they calve, and or a few weeks before they calve. But dry cows are important because it provides a way to reduce your health problem. And we've probably focused more on dry cow nutrition here in the past few years than what we have before, because I think it's essential for healthy calves. So if you have poor dry cow nutrition, you have unthrifty calves, you have increased death loss, you have increased health problems of calves. So focusing on dry cow nutrition is a must. We like to see body condition score for those dry cows about 3.5 to 4. And obviously minerals are a must for dry cows because it provides healthy calves. Another thing that people might not think about is sort of vaccinations for dry cows. We have been vaccinating for our dry cows for the last maybe 8 to 10 years. Before that, there was no dry cow vaccinations. So we, you know, started vaccinating to prevent rotavirus, coronavirus, Clostridium, E. coli. For us, we at our dairy, we use Guardian and Scour Guard sort of when they're available. Those are, you know, there's lots of other ones out there, but those are the ones that we have found that have worked for our dairy. We can talk about lots of vaccinations and how that goes about and why we do some of the things that we do, but certainly dry cow vaccination is an important part of our management protocol. And calf vaccinations, you know, there's a lot of people and even farms that I work with that might not vaccinate their calves for certain respiratory or, you know, digestive bugs. And we started that, and maybe we've talked about that before. We had a train wreck about 10 to 12 years ago. We lost a lot of calves, and it all came down to we weren't vaccinating our animals. So we started doing that, and we've really, people have told me we're over-vaccinating our animals, but so be it. They seem to work well. They respond well. Right now, we're using Enforce 3. It's an intranasal vaccination. We use that at birth for lots of respiratory diseases. We use once PMH at about a week of age, which is for bacterial pneumonia. And we also use a rotavirus and coronavirus vaccines as well. We give Calf Guard, which is an oral vaccine. And some people have said, well, you shouldn't need to give that because we're dry cow vaccinating and that should cover it. But every time I take away the Calf Guard, we seem to have issues. So then I bring it back. So we're going to continue to use Calf Guard for the foreseeable future. Yes, we might be over vaccinating, but it works for us. It works for us. And the last thing sort of we're going to talk some about this is actually measuring the colostrum and serum total proteins of your calves. I have a MISCO refractometer. It's a sort of digital refractometer that can measure bricks in colostrum and serum protein in our calves. Costs somewhere around $500 or so. But I think it's been really important for us in our calf management practices. So let's get down to this study that we did. So we sort of, you know, dreamed up this study way back in 2020. So during sort of the pandemic or the start of the pandemic. So and some of you know before I've did a lot of calf feeding here on this project. So I was very in tune to what was happening with these calves. So what did we do? Well, we had individual calf housing. So calves were housed individually. We, you know, just like sort of standard dairy production, you know, we had calf tell hutches that we placed them in. They were fed with a peach teat nipple, so an individual bucket to those calves. Then we had a pair housing situation. So we basically took two of those calf tells together, made a pen. So it was basically, you know, the same amount of space for an individual calf. They just had buddies to live with and all managed the same way. Then we had a group, which was six calves per pen. And we sort of went with six calves because it might be an easy way for farmers to start out with group housing. I'm more in favor of adding more calves to the pen, but we went with six. And then we also had calves that were actually raised by the cow. You know, we get a lot of those questions, and maybe some people do as well, about from the public, why we take calves away from cows. So we wanted to see what would happen if we raised calves with their dam. You know, these were not nurse cows. This was a calf was born from the dam. The dam raised it. And so we took all of these calves. They were weaned at 9 weeks of age, so 63 days. And We fed them all 10 liters of milk per day. So that's about 2.5 gallons per day. So it's a lot of milk. I'm a firm believer in feeding a lot of milk to calves. I think they do well the more milk we feed. Obviously, the calves that were raised on the cow were fed ad libitum. They could drink as much as what they wanted. We had about 90 calves per treatment group. You know, we had 90 individual calves that we raised, 90 pair calves. Yes, and we raised about 90 calves on their dams. So it was a lot of work, but we found sort of interesting results. So what about colostrum? We had talked about Brix values and total serum protein from these calves. So we measured colostrum from all of the cows that had calves to see what would happen. And I should say that we calve twice a year. So we calve in the fall, kind of mid-September to the end of November, and then we calve mid-March to the end of May. And so we looked at Brix colostrum between the two seasons and really didn't find any difference. Our average Brix level in our colostrum was about 21 to 22, which is actually pretty good. You know, there's sort of a lot of people think there's a cutoff around 18 or 19. Yes, we had some animals that were pretty low for colostrum Brix levels. Some were at 7. You know, we had some at 10 and 15. We had some that were over 35 for Brix levels. So it really was kind of a wide range of Brix levels, but on average, about 21. You know, most of the low levels were probably first calf heifers. You tend to see first calf heifers have lower Brix levels in their colostrum. So then we took serum proteins from these calves after they were about 24 hours old and wanted to measure that as a measure of failure of passive transfer. So we wanted to see, you know, were they getting adequate antibodies from the colostrum? And in a nutshell, they did. If you look at our fall versus spring, the total serum proteins were a little bit higher in the fall, about 5.8 on average. In the spring, about 5.4. And these values ranged from 3.6 to 10.1. So you could say if we have a cutoff of 5, that's sort of what I think the cutoff is based on some other research that we've done with lots of calves. We had some that were low, that probably weren't going to be as healthy. And maybe if we had a disease problem, they were going to have more disease issues and more treatment with issues. But then there were some that were high. But on average, we had adequate passive transfer of antibodies from colostrum to the calves. Now, an interesting thing is, some people might ask, well, what about those calves that were raised by the cow? Well, the interesting thing is, so we did not force feed them colostrum. That calf had to get the colostrum from their cow. We intervened in no way. We vaccinated them. We got a birth weight, and that was all we did. So the, you know, when we maybe kept these calves with the cow for 3 days so they could bond and form that bond, but we didn't do anything else. And what did we find? Well, the calves that were raised on the cow had higher serum proteins than the calves that we separated from their moms. 6.6 was the serum level for the calves raised on the cow. And the other calves, so that we called separated, that's the individual, the pair, and the group housing, 6.1. So you could say there's not much difference, you know, about 0.5. On average, the calves that were raised on the cow had higher serum protein. So, you know, the business of we need to force feed colostrum to calves because they need to get that colostrum in right away. I don't know. I think the calf, you know, will get it from the cow. The cow provides good antibodies. And you know, these calves suckled on their cow. Were there some that did not have high serum proteins? Yes, in both groups. Some were really low, you know, 3.5. Even ones that were raised by mom had low values. But on average, and we can debate that another day probably, about whether calves raised on cows have high serum proteins. I'd like to follow up and do more of a study like that to see what would happen. But it is an interesting factor that they got adequate antibodies from their mom just by suckling. Okay, so that's the birth part. We fed all these calves. They were fed twice a day. I should say that the cows that were raising their calves, they also got milked twice a day. So we milked them. And we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later, but we did milk those cows twice a day. So what about growth? Like I said, we weaned at 9 weeks of age. Weaning weights were individual 219 pounds. Pair housing was 223, so really the same. Group house calves, 227, so really no difference. Calves that were raised on the dam, 250. So about 20 to 25 more pounds in body weight for the calves that were raised on the dam than any of the other methods. And that's simply because they were drinking more milk. We don't know how much milk they were drinking because they were allowed to suckle on the mom 24 hours a day. So we just assume they're drinking more milk based on some of the auto feeder research that I've done before. Some of those calves were probably drinking 15 liters of milk per day. So 8 gallons. We just don't know, but that's sort of what it is. We also found that those calves had larger heart girths, so much more sort of circumference that were raised by mom. The other groups were really no different. So what about average daily gain? So average daily gain for individual, pair, and group housed calves was all the same, 2.2 pounds per day. That is excellent growth. You know, I'm happy with 2.2 pounds per day. I like to see it at 2. We did very well. Calves that were raised on the cow, 2.6. So they were growing almost a half a pound more per day than the other calves. But still, no difference in gain for individual, pair, or group housed calves. So that was growth. And they all grew well. No issues with growth. So people are like, well, what about health? What happens? You know, what did you treat them for? We did record all of that. The scours, the calves that were raised in a group housing situation probably had higher scour incidence rates than the calves in other, whether it's individual, pair, or dam raised calves. And part of that is, you know, they're all together. One gets a disease, they sort of all can kind of get it really quickly. But it was pretty low. 20% of the calves were sort of treated for scours. And what I mean treated is probably some electrolytes. We didn't hardly do any of the treatments. Some of those calves had respiratory issues, more respiratory problems in a group house situation than a individual, pair, or dam raised. You know, the calves that were raised on mom were in a group housing situation as well. But we just didn't see the increase in scours or respiratory problems that we may have saw in a more confined group housing situation with 6 calves only. So that's maybe one consideration that you have to think about in group housing is the diseases, and I understand that. We looked at the health costs of these treatments, really, and the number treated, about 12% of the individual calves were treated for some sort of health problem. 16% of the pair calves were treated for some health problem. 14% of the calves raised on cows were, and 30% of the group calves. So somebody could say, well, we're not going to go group housing because it's, you know, we have treatment problems. We want to reduce that. And I understand that. I really get that. And that is a consideration when going to group housing is if you have a disease outbreak, whether it's respiratory or scours, somebody else might get that. But overall, these calves were all healthy. Like I said, our death rate is really low. We didn't have much issue with death. Yep. Did we have some that died? Yes. And it was really across all of the groups. We had some individual ones. Actually, I don't think we had any individual ones. I know we had some group ones. There were a couple dam-raised calves that died. I think one had like coccidiosis, which, yeah, that's a tough one to figure out. Individual one, yes, we had some. So we're not immune to any of these group housing situations. You know, we also did some other exploration about lying behavior. You know, we put sensors, you know, Brad loves sensors. So we put sensors on these calves to see what their lying behavior was. Well, the calves that were raised on the cow were more active. They just had more space to run. The other groups were about the same. You know, they're in a confined little calf hutch. There isn't much space to run around. So the calves that were raised on mom had more activity and more space to run around. Well, so that's that. And as time went by, we bred these animals. Obviously, not every one of them got pregnant. So we, you know, some got culled before they calved. But then one of the goals was to look at, okay, well, what about behavior of these animals as they come into the milking parlor for the first time? So that's a consideration for raising calves on cows. And people are like, oh, well, we can't, you know, that could be a disaster. And I understand that as well. We'll talk about that. What did we find? Basically, we measured a lot of body measurements on these animals. And when they came in as two-year-olds, we didn't really find much difference. Dam raised calves, the individual, the pair, the group house, they were all the same size when they came in. So those calves caught up when they were heifers. They bred well, we grew them well, and didn't have any issues. So from a body size perspective, at 2 years of age, no issues. Well, what about going into the milking parlor? So we grouped these animals. We measured them, had our milking crew measure whether they come into the parlor well, what their behavior was in the parlor, whether they stomped, defecated in the parlor. How often did they kick the milking unit off? Did they kick at the milker? You know, those are all considerations. And one thing we found was the calves that were raised by their dam were more apt to have worse behavioral scores in the parlor. So they were probably more agitated when they were coming into the milking parlor. They stomped more. They were more apt to kick the milking unit off and kick at the milker. So even 2 years later, and all these animals were grouped together as heifers. You know, they were bred, raised together, whether they were individual group or raised on the cow, they all, you know, made friends when they got older. But 2 years after that, they still had some behavioral issues and were kicking the milkers off more than the calves that were raised in the other methods. Now, was it bad? No, by no means was it bad. But it's one consideration that we saw, that those calves may have a few more issues as they come into the milking parlor. Now, an interesting fact is, you know, so this is our study, and we're still calving the last group of cows, so that were born in the fall of 2022, so 2 years ago. Those are just coming into milk now. So this is the last group of cows, and, you know, we had 400 calves on this project, and the last ones are just calving now. So we'll have more parlor behavior measurements and more body measurements, a lot of those things to see on these animals into the future. And we'll talk about behavior and all of that maybe on another episode. We've done quite a bit of behavioral stuff. But an interesting thing is that we also, part of this project, we did some on-farm surveys. And we went to farms, interviewed them about their general calf management practices. The average herd size here was about 76 cows. It ranged from 34 to 300. So we had, you know, a wide range of farms. Actually, most of the farms that we had talked through, and these were grazing farms, I guess I should say, mostly, you know, grazing dairies. They separate, about 70% of the farms separated calves and cows at a day of age. Some allowed some contact with the dam. Some were full contact. Some were sort of partial contact. And 75% of the calves were raised in group housing situations, which I thought was interesting that most of these farms had moved away from individual housing and were moving towards a more group situation. But an interesting thing that I saw is that 82% of the farms saw that pneumonia or respiratory problems were the most challenging. However, only 30% of the farms were using some sort of vaccination program. So is there a correlation between no vaccination and more respiratory problems? Maybe, maybe not. We're not sure, but I thought that was an interesting phenomenon that we saw, is that most of the problems are respiratory. So really, let's talk about group housing and what we think about sort of group housing and why you might think about group housing. You know, I've talked about group housing for a little bit. Really, what are some of the advantages of group housing? Well, labor is probably reduced, so you don't have as much labor because you're not or use as much labor because you're not feeding calves individually. You're feeding 6 or 10 at a time. These calves are socialized for group living. So that's part of the aspect that the public likes, is these calves are being socialized together. We also have group learning, and that is especially important for starter consumption or grain, is that, you know, these calves are learning from each other, especially when we're eating grain. And I, like I said before, you can get the same amount of growth out of these calves as what you do in individual housing. So there's, I'm not sure what the advantage of individual housing is anymore, outside of people always tell me about disease risk, which I understand. And sometimes it's easier to clean these super hutches or clean these group pens compared to individuals. Well, what about challenges to group housing? Well, yes, calves must be aggressive when they're grouped, because you're feeding a group of calves, and if they are not aggressive drinkers, they're going to have issues and probably fall behind in growth. You must have weak calves must be separated from the group. You know, otherwise, they're just going to go downhill really fast. Obviously, calf workers have to be good observers, because it can be a more challenging space to find calves that aren't doing well. For us, mostly, it's if they're not coming up to drink, then we need to check them and see what's going on. That's probably the number one way. If they're not running up to the feeder right away to drink when you feed them, something is not right. We talk about ages in group housing. You know, you don't want it to be too far apart. You don't want to be calves that are 4 days of age in with calves that are 3 weeks of age. That can be a problem. We talked about diseases may affect more calves. You get respiratory problems. You're going to affect more calves, scours probably. And some people like to have that individual attention to the calves, and I understand that. So here's 10 tips or so for group management. So obviously the biggest one is separate the newborns from the fresh cows and provide adequate colostrum. Number one, colostrum. And we'll talk about colostrum next week, actually, with some other researchers on colostrum. So you want to train them to drink well from a nipple and make sure they're aggressive. Obviously, you don't want to add new calves to the group if they're not aggressive. Most of them are probably ready by day 3 of age. That's one thing to consider. Smaller calves you might not put with the group right away. That could be an issue as well. And we feed high quality milk. We're feeding 10 liters. My progression is, when we started here, it was 4 liters. Then I did some studies where we were feeding 6 liters. Then I went to 8. For this study, I went to 10. And that's kind of where I've done some ad libitum as well. I've kind of settled on that 10 liters or 2.5 gallons of milk per calf per day. And I think that's adequate for adequate growth and health. In groups, you want to restrict the age and size of the group. You know, you don't want calves that are 4 days of age with 3 weeks. So usually 10 days spread between the youngest and the oldest is probably enough. So that you sort of have to size your groups in that regard. Some people are like, oh, well, what about sucking? They suck on each other. They're going to suck on each other. And well, that it is a consideration. Sometimes we leave the nipple feeder with them longer so they don't suck on each other. I think if we feed the calves enough milk so they are not hungry after they're done drinking, they will not suck on each other. And that's why we have gone to higher levels of milk, is because if you're feeding them a lot, they just tend not to suck on each other. Also, you want to provide adequate water, clean bedding, and an outside exercise area so they can run around. We wean the calves when they're usually average starter intake is about 2 pounds per calf per day for about 3 consecutive days. So we want them to eat a lot of grain. And most of them are doing that 30 days in. And when we sort of group these calves, we sort of leave them with the group that they were raised with after weaning for a week or 2 weeks before we merge them in with the bigger groups. So that can be one thing is how to group these calves after you wean them. In the end, hopefully you've learned a little bit about our calf study. We found that we get adequate growth no matter what housing system they were raised on. Group calves may have had some higher health treatment costs for scours and respiratory issues, so that's certainly a consideration. But we got adequate growth out of these calves, didn't have any problems. So it really, there are some advantages to raising calves in groups and pairs. We certainly will be exploring more of this into the future. Hopefully you keep growing calves well and providing a lot of good quality nutrition to your calves. So I think we'll wrap there today. If you have any comments or questions about our calf studies, feel free to let me know. If you have any scathing rebuttals, you can contact Emily at The Moose Room, that's themoosroom at umn.edu. Or you can find us on the internet at U of M Extension, U of M Farm Safety. You can find me at WCROC on the internet as well. Hopefully you've learned something. We'll see you next time.